Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Tales of Recovery. This is your host, Gris Alves, and my guest today is Felina Nicole, formerly known as Felina Hertz. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Yes.
That's good enough.
Yes. And Felina is a writer, author. She's a teacher, a spiritual director, phenomenal human being that I am very grateful for. The influence and the help that you gave me in my journey in this life of trying to figure out what the heck am I doing in this planet and to have a purpose, you know, for it. And so welcome, Felina, to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I will be putting all the links on how to find you and your books at the end of the podcast. But Felina has written two beautiful books that I know of, Pilgrimage of the Soul and Mindful Silence. I read Pilgrimage of the Soul and decided, okay, I have to call you to help me, because I met Felina at a time where I was transitioning from sort of like conditioned religious beliefs towards something that I thought I knew and I had inside of me, which was a more of like a connection to spirit that didn't have to have all of these rules that I was finding myself in at the church, right? I guess we can talk about that in a little bit, but if you wouldn't mind telling a little bit of how you got to where you're at right now. I know you've done so much work in social justice and all over the world. So welcome.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you, Grace. And after such a long time, and I've been watching you from afar, it's been amazing just to see really such a rebirth that took place in your life and how you are really flourishing from what I can tell. And I can just sense that really wonderful energy of light and peace and a depth of love that is such a gift to everyone who knows you. So I love seeing you really flowing with that river of life that's available to all of us, that we can kind of ride the current and open to its flow. And I see that happening in you. It's really awesome. So it's nice to be with you and kind of catch up a little bit. And so I came, for your listeners, I grew up in an evangelical Christian tradition. My father was a pastor. I grew up in middle America, and very traditional kind of American Christian culture. Very much shaped by patriarchy, both in the culture at large and in the religious culture that I was a part of. And I got my start in life as a young adult working internationally among survivors of trafficking, children with HIV and AIDS, former child soldiers, war brides. And I did that work for almost 20 years, worked in more than 70 countries. And it was really intense, as you know. And along the way, that intensity of exposure to human suffering revealed to me just how limited I was in living in this world and responding to this world in a way that really brought life and flourishing. So I met a teacher along the way when I was ready, where at a point when my spiritual practices that used to sustain me in my faith and life journey kind of fell short, they just weren't kind of helping me deal with real life. I met this teacher, Thomas Keating, a Cistercian monk, who is one of the architects of a practice called centering prayer. And it's rooted in the historic contemplative tradition, and it's a meditation practice. And it just came right on time meeting him and meeting this practice that could help me learn how to be in solitude, silence, and stillness with reality. And that was a major turning point for me. I took to that meditation practice kind of like a bee to honey, because I was really at a point of desperation. Like, my faith was really important to me. I believed in God, ultimate reality. I thought I knew what that was. And at that point in my life, realized I knew very little, and I had very little to offer a hurting world. And so I took to this practice because I was just really desperate for it. And it was at that point that I just transitioned really from the sort of American traditional Christian way of spiritual practice, like going to church and doing those types of things that wasn't really nourishing me anymore. It wasn't supporting my onward growth and development. And I just dove in headfirst to the contemplative tradition, meaning I began a serious meditation practice and just started reading all of the mystics that I could and learning a lot from teachers like Thomas Keating and Richard Rohr and Cynthia Bourgeau. And these are some of the American contemplative teachers of our time who were really renewing the contemplative tradition for us. And through their support and teaching and the historic mystics, just began to find my way, which meant the beginnings of a lot of undoing in my life, in my personality structure and understanding kind of who I am and how I relate to the world. And that's a whole lifetime worth of conversation. So now I am living in the mountains of northern New Mexico. I'm recently divorced from a 25-year marriage. And I'm living a life of relative simplicity, a lot of solitude, a lot of silence, a lot of stillness. One of my girlfriends who's known me throughout my adulthood said, "It's interesting because you got your start in activism and then you went deep into contemplation, integrating activism and contemplation. And now it's like you're living contemplation." And I would say that's true. And I'm finding kind of a different way of living into an active presence in the world, but doing very different work.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I see you up in the mountains and I'm like, yeah, that's kind of where I want to go. Slower, more, you know, simpler, beautiful. So these guys that you mentioned, these teachers, Thomas Keaton and Richard Rohr, I don't know whether you led me to them or maybe it was Michelle and Ryan, but just, you know, to let people that are listening, I also kind of went through that process because of you. So because I kind of want to talk a little bit about how to, I know there's a lot of people that I talk to, there's a lot of people that listen on here that are kind of on this road of, I can't really leave this religion, but also I want like this peace, right? This calm, this stillness. I don't want these obligatory check boxes making me feel ashamed of what I'm feeling or what I'm wanting to do in life, you know? And so these contemplative practices, I remember, and I'd like to see if you want to talk about your unraveling a little bit, and I'm guessing that's why you helped me so much in mine. Because even when I read your book, I thought, you know, you went from Christian to this Catholic, and I went from Catholic to Christian because I thought, you know, the other way around, I'm like, why would you ever want to be a Catholic? I guess it's a little bit more contemplative than maybe the, you know, the evangelical Christian. I don't know. But part of my unraveling was really settled by some of these practices that you taught me and that I saw through Thomas Keaton, which was really, I remember I'd call you on the phone and we'd start with this. Just close your eyes and you tell me, be still and know. Be still and know. And I'd be like, okay, what is she talking about? Be still. And then be still. Be still. And then at the end, it would be like, be. And, you know, it took me like a couple of weeks or I don't even know to finally be able to realize like, oh, okay, I'm dropping into the body. This is something that is in the flesh more than just up in the mind. And through these practices, because then I also would sit every day for an hour with Thomas Keaton. Just something happened inside of me that, and it's so funny because I would tell you, Felina, I figured this out. You would never give me any answers. You would just say, yeah, well, what do you think, you know? Which was really beautiful. Because I felt like you were just helping me in this discovery, in this remembering, really, of something that I already knew was inside of there. I didn't even come to believe in anything. I just realized I already know. I'm really grateful for that. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about your unraveling of how, you know, this happened for you. Because I'm assuming it happened before we met, but then also there was some more unraveling if you, you know, divorced and now you're changing your name and I see what you're doing now, which is a lot more of this trauma-informed somatic. How about?
Yeah, wow. Well, thanks for that feedback. I'm so touched that, you know, that our time together was helpful. And
absolutely.
That kind of work is what I live for, you know, just to be a support to people who are trying to remember who they are. And I think, you know, that's one of the greatest disservices of a lot of religion, I think. And let me just speak for what I know, which is the Christian and Catholic forms of religion, that first off, there is the religion, which is kind of the organized institutional doctrine, dogma, teaching of the church. And then there is the essence of the teaching. There is the spirituality of the teaching. And it's people like Richard Rohr who do such a wonderful job of helping us extract what the essence of the teachings are. And unfortunately, there's a lot of ways in which organized religion does kind of like keeps us away from or at a distance from that essence, and it becomes a lot of rules and regulations and obligations, and it can be there can be a lot of guilt and shame related to the teachings. So for me, let's see, so there's the religion and there's the essence of the teaching. And I, as I found my way on the contemplative path, was able to, I think, find a path of the essence of the teaching, which then opened me to a lot of universal spiritual teaching, where so many of the teachers are saying the same thing, regardless of the tradition. Anyway, I think I lost my train of thought from your original question. I got it carried away with the religious stuff.
No, but it's great because it's kind of how, no, thank you. Thank you for explaining that, kind of how you, you know, that's kind of the pathway of opening up to like, well, wait a minute. It's kind of like, why is this, why do you think that this is exclusive, right? Where really everybody's kind of believing that. But I guess kind of what the question was also is, how do you handle this unraveling? Because it's an unraveling. I mean, for me, it was so intense. You know, because you just have these, it's almost like pathological. You know, I would wake up in the middle of the night thinking, but what if it's not, what if it's real? And what if I'm really going to go to hell? And then I would say, oh, please, you know, but deep down in the back of the head, there's this programming, you know, beyond like owning your body and doing what you want. This programming of, well, what if it's true, you know, and what if I'm really going to go to hell? Or what if this is a really, whatever, a sin? I don't know. There's an unraveling that might be, you know?
Yeah. I think that really speaks to some of what maybe I was getting at with the religion versus the teaching, or the essence of the teachings, is that fear that comes into so many of the religions, that that is really based on this external authority. Mm-hmm. And so then there's, and this ties into what you're saying around your journey of remembering who you are, and coming in contact with that inner knowing and that inner wisdom. And it was the contemplative path that, and tradition that helped me to find that, because, and to find a way really to reconcile my Christian experience and, in the religion with my lived reality and my lived experience, so that I didn't have to turn my back on any of it, really, like in terms of the essence of the teaching. So this unraveling that occurs, I think, has a lot to do with what is necessary to uncover that inner knowing and that inner wisdom, which the contemplative tradition helps highlight. In the Christian faith, there is this understanding of God as both transcendent and immanent, meaning that God is out there apart from us and also dwells within us. And this is a very distinct Christian understanding of God or ultimate reality. Other religions see it in somewhat different ways, but in the Christian faith, there are those two aspects, and that's what really helped me a lot through the contemplative tradition to begin to recognize God's imminent presence. And that's what a lot of Christian religion does not help us to see or understand or uncover. So what happens is too much of a dependence on this external authority, God out there, which is then channeled through the laity of, or the clergy of the church, the written scriptures of the church, the written teachings, doctrines, dogmas, whatever. And so we kind of grow up with this overdependence on this external authority, and we can't think for ourselves. We can't trust our own intuition, which is really also connected to patriarchy, because as you well know, the feminine nature is inherently at home in intuition. And that has been so stamped out over the centuries by a patriarchal religion that was afraid of that. And it's, I think, very much the divine feminine that unlocks for us that that intuition and that portal to the inner knowing, which is the immanent presence of God within. But that was feared over the centuries. So here we are in our modern times, and if we've grown up in Christian religion, we have learned to not trust ourselves. And if we're women, we've learned to not trust ourselves even more because of our gender. So there's all of that baggage that we've inherited. And so the unraveling came by way of showing up in the silence through contemplative practice, learning how to be with reality and what is, and beginning to see all of these fears, all of these concerns, all of these doubts, all of that was coming up, and learning how to surrender to all of that that's coming up and surrender into God. And it was that path that allowed for me then to begin to let go of that which was holding me back, really, from reaching my potential. I think a lot of us can probably relate to that in our experience growing up in the church, of that limitation on our full development.
Yeah, in so many ways. I don't know, maybe you can explain a little bit about, who somebody who's on here doesn't know what a contemplative practice is, how you would teach it or how it works.
Yeah. So contemplation is comes from the Latin word contemplatio, which means to observe, to see. And so a contemplative practice is different from a lot of the prayers that we're taught in church, which is a different kind of prayer. It's not contemplation prayer. It's prayer with words and images, and it's often a lot of requests from God. This type of prayer meditation that is contemplation is all about helping us to see and to observe what is. And so it's naturally designed to teach us how to surrender to what is, or to let go into what is. And by doing so, we start to realize how much we're actually attached to various things. attached to relationships, attached to particular communities of belonging, i.e. religion, church, attached to certain, what my teacher Thomas Keating would call programs for happiness, being attached to the program for power and control, affection and esteem, security and survival. And I mean, this is just brilliant because I have found that most all of my challenges in life are connected to an attachment related to one of those programs, either my struggle to be in control, my my disappointment at not getting the affirmation that I want, or security, concerns around security. And those attachments keep us from being truly free, which I imagine in what you've experienced in your rebirth, if I can call it that, and really just finding your way back home to yourself has been filled with having to let go of security, leaving your job, for example, you know, and being in control and being approved of by former friends, perhaps, or communities and such. And what we see is that when we get on that path of contemplation, of observing what is, having the courage to see what is, and noticing all of our attachments, and we see how we are unfree, and we can begin to find our courage in that essential self that we're returning to, that is very much like the Christ who confronted all of those same programs for happiness, mm-hmm. and found a way to be free regardless of power and control, affection and esteem, or security and survival, right?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It's because I remember when I was going through, like, yeah, I think you guys are fundamentalists. I don't really think I'm going to be a part of this. I mean, I was on this board of directors of some silly little church. And then I was like, you guys are, I got in too deep to realize, you know, you're not really doing, I don't think you're really helping at all, you know. And one of the things that they, like one of the things that happened is, like, for example, we had a lot of friends. We had a lot of friends in there. I remember, like, from one year, we had get, like, you know, 100 Christmas cards, and then the next year, one.
Right. Yeah. One. Right.
I mean, it was hilarious. I didn't think it was hilarious at the time. You know, it was pretty hurt, yeah. pretty hurtful, and people were telling me some very horrible things. But I really realized, like, oh, these are the true colors. There's a lot of fear going on here. And the fear is way greater than this love, this simplicity, this, you know, this faith, if you want to call it, you know, that we're supposed to be, you know, walking alongside each other with.
Yeah, right.
It was, but it's so funny you say that, because I remember I love Thomas Keane. One of the things I remember is the programs for happiness.
Yeah, they're so helpful, right?
Yeah. If you do this, you're going to be happy. I'm like, I've been doing them and they just don't work. They just don't work. I don't know how it was for you, but for me, I think I was dying inside, like, I think maybe for like at least 4 years.
Yeah. I remember that. You were, I think by the time we met, you were fighting for your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was just so intense. I don't know. And I'm guessing you see a lot of people, right, that come work for you that have this same type of, like, help. What's real? What's not real?
Yeah, I mean, that is the most of the work that I do is with clients who are waking up, who are beginning to observe and see reality for what it is. And finding the courage to recognize the ways in which they're not living their essential life, that they're trapped, they're in prison in a way, mm-hmm. To these attachments, to belief systems, to various forms of conditioning. And it's that you know, that ability to really listen to the ways in which the body, the emotions, and the psyche are sounding off, trying to get our attention, that you're drowning here in this system that you've been living in, you know, that there's more for your life. You know, our bodies have a way of alerting us to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I remember in my own unraveling, I mean, it was over a period of years. And the thing is, God only gives us as much as we can handle. And so I remember in the beginning, a lot of fear came up for me. And I could only go so fast in the process, right? Mm-hmm. And it was just...
Okay, so we're back. A little bit of technical difficulties here. Felina, you're up in the mountains. Where are you? Are you in Montana or New Mexico?
New Mexico, northern New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the Sangre de Cristo Mountains.
De Cristo, nice.
Yeah.
You're, I think we're talking about contemplative, how the contemplative practices work, which we can get to, but I wanted to ask, so you are near Richard Rohr, right? Where he has the...
He was actually here a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It was really wonderful to be able to gift him with a private retreat. So he and the executive director for the CAC came out, and they had a nice kind of just retreat, you know, in the mountains. It was really lovely to have him here and to be able to give back to him in that way.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, one of his books was my favorite, Breathing Underwater. It was so helpful when you're in recovery and you're like trying to kind of figure this whole thing out. But I wanted to ask about, because, you know, you started this center for the Gravity Center for Contemplative Activism. Is that kind of how you, well, could you tell us what that was? Because I don't think you're there anymore.
Say again.
You're not there anymore.
That's right. So, after all those years working in social justice around the world and coming into the contemplative tradition, finding that to be so helpful for really uncovering unconscious motivations for the way that I lived my life and relationships, I was slowly being changed and wanted to devote more of my time and energy to helping others find their way into this kind of spirituality of waking up and taking more responsibility for ourselves. And so I started Gravity, a center for contemplative activism, with my former husband. And we were able to give about 10 years of service with Gravity, doing just that, like working with all kinds of people from all different walks of life, helping them integrate their very active lives, whether it was social justice work or some other kind of work, but connecting their active lives with their inner life and their and teaching them about the contemplative tradition. So we would give retreats, and that's when I started giving spiritual direction and meeting with clients one-on-one and doing a lot of teaching at churches and universities, seminaries on the contemplative tradition. So there's definitely been an awakening in organized Christian religion to the contemplative tradition. There are a lot of churches who are trying to incorporate more of these kinds of contemplative practices that I think just really speak to a more mature kind of religious faith. Mm-hmm. Churches that are integrating contemplative practice are doing the onward work of helping people wake up and take more responsibility for themselves and trust their inner knowing and all of not being afraid of that, you know, but really churches that are able to support individuals that are evolving, you know, more and more.
Yeah, not moving so much from fear. It's interesting, the quote you said, to receiving or uncovering unconscious motivations. When you said that, I was like, wow, that's a lot of kind of, I think what at least I was doing, a lot of maybe what religion teaches you. You, without knowing, right, you have these motivations, these programs of happening. If I do this, I'll be good. If I do that, I'll be bad. So Uncovering the unconscious motivations, I think, is at least one of the things that came up in the contemplative practice for me as well.
Yeah, like why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you connected to various groups that you're connected to? Why are you experiencing these kinds of things in your relationships? Like beginning to wake up and see all of that kind of shows, like, oh, again, our attachments, like, I'm doing this because I'm afraid if I don't, I won't get the approval or the affection or esteem that I desire. And when you start to see that, like I did in my own life, and I was able to then consciously let go of that more and more and more, not be driven by, oh, I'll make all these decisions rooted in this unconscious motivation that is, if I don't do this, I may not get the approval or esteem or affection that I'm wanting. When we see that at play and we wake up, you know, we wake up to it, we see it at work, then we're empowered to see that program running and choose, oh, I'm not going to be driven by that anymore. I'm going to make a conscious choice that is more aligned with my essential self. This is what I will do, even if you disagree. Prove or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Like, because one of the questions is like, how, you know, how does this land with your parents? I don't know. And also, you're still sort of, even though you're doing contemplative, you know, I guess I'm a different story, because I'm like, I will never go to the church again in my life, you know. I'm just like, but if you're still sort of in this, I don't know, like, how did it, you know, go with your parents, with your family? Because that's a lot of the things that they're running into. It's like, but my mom, my dad, they're going to.
Right. That's right. And Jesus said, unless you hate your parents, you cannot be my disciple. You know, it's like this really strong, awful language. But then in this example, you know, I see, oh, that was the essence of his teaching. Like, of course, Jesus didn't want us to hate anyone, but he's trying to make the point that if you're overly attached to what your parents think of you when you're a grown ass woman, you know, you better think again. Like, you got to live your life, lady, you know, and you got to follow in faith what you know to be, you know, the reason that you're here and the work that you're here to do. And, but so yeah, with my folks, I mean, it's been interesting. They're really wonderful. They're incredibly connected and supported to me. It's been a delicate dance, because they would definitely be more fundamentalist Christian in that camp. They're very attached to what feels safe in terms of the teaching of the church that they've received. And in their own way, to give them credit, they have progressed also. You know, they've done, you know, some of their work, but they don't engage in the contemplative tradition. They don't have a meditation practice. We're walking in very different paths in terms of our personal, how our personal faith kind of takes shape and the practices that we engage in. My dad is very devoted to the church. You know, I mean, he'll never miss a Sunday service kind of thing. You know, I, on the other hand, I don't remember the last time I attended church, to be honest. Though I moved from evangelical tradition into the Catholic faith, because the Catholic tradition was so historically rooted in the contemplative tradition, that I found that really helpful for a season of my life. Since then, I don't consider myself really any, I don't align with any one religion, or I don't find church helpful. And I work with a lot of Christians. Somehow I still get invited into some Christian circles and spaces, but it's really with people in that Christian faith tradition that are wanting more.
Right.
That are finding that, you know, there are those practices that have sustained them up to that point are also falling short. As a collective, they're ready for more. Mm-hmm. So those groups I still work with. But I just, yeah, I don't, my parents, they, it's a delicate dance in that I have held their hand through the changes that have taken place in my life and the ways in which I don't look like the kind of Christian that they would have maybe raised me to be or something. And they see the fruit of my life, and they can't, you know, argue that. They've been very supportive. I mean, even now, like, you know, I'm in a loving, committed relationship with the most beautiful man on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, such a good, good human being. And unexpectedly, we found one another, and I'm, you know, not really interested in marriage. The institution of marriage didn't serve me very well in my 25-year experience, and my parents have lovingly come along with me, and that's like a really big deal. and they love David, and they're doing their best to just accept the way my life has unfolded.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm sure you inspire them. I mean, I think sometimes the parents don't say, but
yeah, they see.
They see, you know? Yeah, yeah, they see, and they, it's like, they kind of say that in the 12-step programs, that it's not a program of promotion, but of attraction. When people see, they're like, wait a minute, what are you doing over there?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, it causes some cognitive dissonance because you don't necessarily fit into the box that they would want you to fit in, and yet they're so attracted to the life in you. And I mean, that's what it's all about. It's not about the box. It's about, it's life really flowing through you. Jesus talked about it as living water, you know. Is that flowing or not? And if it's not, then you better get aligned with whatever changes need to take place in your life so that life energy can flow through you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, if anybody here feels stuck like that, I recommend you work with Felina. No, it's just, you know, funny because, I mean, I tried going to therapy and doing retreats and, you know, workbooks about this. And I read all the books and all the apologetics and all. And the thing that really helped me was I had a timer in the morning, 5:30 a.m. I'm not moving from the seat until 6:15. It was 45 minutes in the morning, 45 minutes at night. And I would sometimes get a little training with like Thomas Keaton or some, just like, he would say, go. I think he mentioned one time that there was really no purpose in doing it. You're just noticing and observing. But he's like, yeah, it's like you're in a hole within a hole within a hole within a hole. So I would just sit there trying to find the hole, whatever. But I think, and then I would meet with you once a week. But it was that commitment to, and it, you know, sometimes now I teach, okay, that was maybe a little too masculine, right? You can flow and you can move and, you know, we can meditate washing the dishes. But for me, I was so desperate that I had to do that. And it was like 6 months of doing that, Felina.
Yeah, good.
And then, and I mean, I still do it. Maybe not twice a day now, but that is just the time where I have this space of relief.
Yes.
Of just like, oh, I don't know anything and it's okay and it doesn't matter because I'm right here.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, that's right. The Christian mystics refer to it as like resting in God. And it is really kind of how it is, huh? Just giving yourself a rest.
Yeah. Without figuring it out. I wanted to ask you if you want, you work with Mother Teresa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little about that? I think that's.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, she made a huge impact on my life without really saying a word. So I worked with her in Calcutta, India, at the House for the Dying, with her and her Sisters of Charity. And what I observed in their lifestyle and in their spirituality, they would get up every morning before the sunrise. They would go to their chapel, which faced the busiest street in one of the crowded cities in the world that is just flooded with noise pollution and air pollution and sound pollution, all of it. And I guess noise and sound pollution is the same thing, but you understand. And their chapel was built facing that. And I found that very curious because it's like, wouldn't you want it to be in a very quiet place? But what I witnessed was that they would, you know, show up every morning for prayer and meditation in that chapel, facing the sounds and cries of the world. And so right there at the beginning of the day, they're integrating contemplation and action. And then they would go out into their work. They would serve the most vulnerable of the world's poor, people dying on the streets, children abandoned in garbage dumps. I mean, just, you know, the worst of the worst, the horrific suffering of people. And throughout their day, they would retreat from that work and they would go into their little chapels at these different homes and they would do their prayers. And then they would come back in and take care of the people. And so I saw this rhythm of action and contemplation woven throughout their day, throughout their week, throughout their year. And it made a big impression on me. And then and meeting Mother was, I mean, it is amazing to meet people who we consider saints who have evolved to such a state of awareness that they are living in that divine flow of life and love and more regularly than the rest of us. And that energy, you just can't help but feel it, you know, and to know that this person has found something that I need, you know, they have found a way to live in this world that can, you know, can produce so much love and life and courage and faith and all of it. And so she made a big impression on me, and I found myself, you know, trying to emulate her in some way or another by integrating contemplation and action in whatever way that I could.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, what a treat, right? To have been able to be and witness that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, you said it, you contemplative action. It's not just about just sitting around and discovering that, you know, this or that was God, but to actually put it into action and then go feed yourself with more contemplative practice so that you can continue going without.
Yeah. Well, you know, I look at your life, Gri, and I see that integration of contemplation and action so beautifully, because as you were, you know, remembering your story of kind of waking up and remembering who you are, there was all that contemplation or contemplative practice that you were engaged in. And then what did it do? You know, it really unlocked for you the action that you are supposed to take in this world. You as Gri Alves, you know, that unique to you, this is what you're here for. That came alive for you. And now you're flowing in that, right?
Yeah.
So different from how it was before, right? Where you try to fit into a certain box or you try to appease, you know, a certain belief system or community or whatever. And once you find your way into that awakening, and that kind of inner knowing, then it's a natural integration of your inner life with your outer life. There's integrity there. There's a oneness there. There's an alignment there, right?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Thank you for seeing that. It feels, oh yeah. Thank you. Felina sees that. It's because, you know, sometimes I don't, I mean, there's definitely a lot lighter life these days.
Yeah.
There's always some new lesson, of course, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, the lightness of being in this, yeah, in this non-fakeness. You don't like me? That's okay. You know?
Yeah.
I don't like you either. No, just kidding. No, it's like... I never did. I was just trying to fit in. horrible.
Yeah.
And it's just so, it's like you said earlier, it's a little bit of a prison, but yeah, I, you know, waking out of it, moving slowly. And, you know, it takes a long time.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, when we were talking about this before we started recording, like maybe 7 years ago, or maybe even more than that, we were talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, this unraveling. And every time it gets a little bit easier or more expansive, is, I guess. Maybe the river just is growing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's very beautiful. So do you want to tell us a little bit of what you're doing now? I mean, I saw that you have like a video teaching with your book, Mindful Silence.
Mm-hmm.
And I also saw you, I don't know, a little bit ago, you popped up on Work of the People, also doing some videos over there, which I love that mm-hmm. channel. That's really cool mm-hmm. what they're doing too.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that work is out there and hopefully people are benefiting from it. My primary work right now is spiritual direction, meeting with clients one-on-one via Zoom or phone. So from my little hermitage here in the mountains, I can meet with anyone anywhere, which is really wonderful. And I do love that because for much of my career or vocation, I was traveling a lot for work. And since the pandemic hit, I've not returned to traveling for work. And I'm finding that to be a real gift to me after all those years. So yeah, I can't really speak to my work without sharing that it was a couple of years ago that I ended my 25-year marriage. And that, as people can imagine, was the hardest decision of my life up to that point. Mm-hmm. And had been a decision in the making for quite some time. And but I made that choice, that decision, and then anyone who has gone through divorce of any length of time, and especially when someone's been married for a long time, you know, it takes a good while to recover. And so I have been very much recovering from kind of the collapse of the life that I knew, because it wasn't just the loss of, you know, my life partner. It was the loss of my expectations and dreams for that marriage. It was the loss of a professional partnership. It ended up being the loss of my nonprofit. It was the loss of my community in a lot of ways. There's, you know, quite a few friendships that aren't a part of my life anymore. And so all of that loss has meant that I've needed to give ample margin to just recalibrate. There's a lot of cleanup from the rubble of all that, and emotionally and spiritually, a lot of need to just recover and rest. Divorce in and of itself is a trauma. It can trigger some pretty severe aspects of the nervous system going into survival mode. And so I've had to work through a lot of that. And so I'm pleased, you know, to report that as soon as I made the decision, though it wasn't easy to move through all of that, this whole other world opened up to me that was just so much more aligned with what we're talking about. You know, it's just another piece of the path for me that's like just getting more and more and more aligned with my essential self and why I'm here and what I'm meant to be about in the world. And it was time, you know, to make that change so that I could be more free and more aligned with, you know, who I am and the work that I have to do. So,
yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm.
Yeah, it's freedom, right? To be more free. Regardless of the struggle or the loss or whatever you need to go through. That's what Gawar says. I'm in taking this compassionate inquiry training with Gawar Mate.
Nice.
So good. And he always says, like, what's the whole point of all this work? What's the whole point? Freedom, liberation. You know, And it's
That's right.
Hard work, you know, hard decisions, divorce, leaving churches, leaving friendships. But in the end, it's like, yeah, these were attachments, like you said, survival mechanisms to be approved of. But now, you know, to be free and authentic and sleep better at night.
It's so true. It is so true. Yeah. And you have much less impulse to turn to numbing agents of any kind. And how many people, right, in our world are just numbing out whenever they can, because deep down, unconsciously, they know they are not living their truest life. And it takes enormous courage to do so. But when we wake up and we, you know, get more and more and more free, there's less need to numb out. Isn't that right?
So true. It's so true. It's like, hey, yeah, it's like you're, it's like life itself has so much energy that you don't really need, you know, yeah, to be on Netflix 5 hours a day or to be drinking this or smoking that.
Yeah.
Or even to be seeking, you know, which a lot, it's a lot like, give me antidepressant, give me anti-anxiety. It's like,
yeah.
If it yeah. be, it'd be so simple to see that these are programs, subconscious programs that aren't working, and that the body keeps the score, and that
yes, that's right. Feeling like,
oh my gosh, just me even thinking about what my body felt like 9, 10 years ago. And I was, you know, I was going to CrossFit. I was going to yoga. I mean, I was doing exercise. I was eating right. It wasn't like I was in this hole of shooting up heroin. I mean, but my body felt like so tired, trapped, oppressed.
Yeah.
There was like this sense of suffocating.
Yeah.
I think the only reason I didn't numb is because I had been in NA for so long and I just knew better.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, which served you so well, because you knew you couldn't go back and do that, which just really supported the onward awakening process, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anything else you wanna share before we close out? Or,
you know, I just want to thank you for the work that you're doing. What I see of it is amazing. And I love that, you know, you're a part of this global movement to support people's healing and recovery and awakening and, you know, really kind of midwifing them into their essential self. It's amazing. It's beautiful. And I just love being acquainted with anyone who's doing that work. It's like there's such a resonance with you and with others who are doing this work. And I think we're living in an amazing time where there is a lot of energy collectively around the planet for our awakening, that there's something really amazing going on, that we have so many spiritual technologies available to us now that can support us. There's no reason for any of us to stay asleep and unhappy and kind of in a prison of sorts, because there's just too many opportunities to help us all break free into really living our best life. So thank you for what you're doing. It's awesome.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you. I feel so seen and so grateful. Thank you for coming on here and sharing your time with us. And yeah, everyone listening, thanks for listening. Please make sure to share this episode with everyone and send us any questions or comments. Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you, Felina.
Thank you.